A bit of information out of Britain. Firms in Brexit are in a Brexit supply shock as EU workers stay away. That's one of the stories that I've been watching here. But here's another one here. Major airlines have hit out at border force after passport control queues at Heathrow Airport reached as long as 2.5 hours in July. Virgin Atlantic has joined British Airways in criticizing lengthy waiting times that they say are becoming the norm. The longest queues were seen on the 6th of July, when non-European economic area visitors spent up to 2 hours and 36 minutes waiting in immigration queues. And here is this one here, too, about the firms in Brexit and a Brexit supply shock. They are saying here that many of the workers are staying away. Companies are suffering from staff shortages because of a fall in EU nationals going to the UK, according to new research which has been done. 2 in 5 employers, 40%, said that they have found it more difficult to fill vacancies during the last 12 months due to a combination of fewer and less suitable applicants. The number of applicants per vacancy has fallen since last summer across all levels of skilled jobs. That's what a survey of 2,000 employers by the Chartered Institute of Personnel and Development, the professional body for HR staff and recruitment firm Adecco, had found. The institute said the shortages had forced more than half of organizations to raise starting salaries to recruit staff and increase wages to retain existing employees. This is Down to Brass Tacks.
Is that it?
Yes, sir.
I'm here, yes.
Yeah, you were saying.
Let me ask you, does Ms. Motley have a degree in economics that you know of?
Not as far as I know.
Right. Now, I ask that because I heard a caller earlier say to you that to be a leader, they should have some background in economics or in the country's affairs or something like that. And I thought that was so short-sighted in that he does not, or he forgot, that there is something called you can delegate positions to other persons that are within the party or the organization, take those duties and those responsibilities, which will then inform you to be able to make better decisions and so on. So that, to say that, I thought was very weak. And I want to say here that...
But I don't understand why you're focusing on that exclusively. That's not
I'm going on to other
things. That's not the main point. I certainly reacted to that and indicated that.
Okay.
It wasn't just about the leadership, because in the case of the Democratic Labour Party, it needs to strengthen its capacity to delegate to people who have a knowledge of economics.
There you are. So I want to go on to other things. I don't know if persons who are saying these things about Ms. DePisa have ever taken the time to listen to her debating skills and her understanding in the Senate when she had to debate on bills and so on. I don't know if they've heard that or they took time to do this.
I want you to brace yourself.
Pardon?
I want you to brace yourself for a reality.
But I'm saying to you,
that reality is that no matter how many years she was in politics and no matter how many occasions on which she spoke, you are now going to get questions and a scrutiny that she has not had before.
But yes, Ms. Ellis, you see, this is what I'm saying to you. This is what I'm saying to you. To say, disregard her as the appointed leader for the party and to be critical of that position, is to me a wrong-headed thing to say, because leadership has to come in a variety of areas. Your your ability to be able not only to delegate, but to be able to understand the issues and to be able to not only articulate them, but to be able to point out new directions in which they should go and things of that sort. So that to try to pigeonhole her in one area, I think is wrong.
So what new directions in all the years that you have heard of, what were new directions you heard from her?
I heard her debating skill. I'm talking about her debating skill that I've heard. I'm saying that she has the ability and the knowledge whereby that she can give directions.
But what has she said in public over the years that makes you feel that she's got a sense of new direction for the Democratic Labour Party?
I heard her on the platform debating.
Saying what?
Issues. Various issues on the political platform as well, and then in the House as well. So that, you see, we've got to be able to understand that if we are looking and the party has elected a new person, then that person will now have the slate filled and will come with new strategies that they would see that should be enunciated.
Here's a question.
And portrayed.
Here's a question for you. Somebody writes here, David, is this not bloodline politics? Is it? Do you want to respond to that?
Well, that person know what they're talking about. I mean, they know what they're talking about.
But you
about.
Know full they, well what they're talking. You know, you know full well what they're suggesting here.
I'm not the one who mentioned anything about any bloodline.
No. But this is coming out of the last campaign by the Democratic Labour Party when it spoke about bloodline politics being the influential factor behind Ms. Motley's presence in the leadership and all of that.
Well, that was mainly talking about family bloodline.
Right, and therefore, since she is a relative of Philip Graves, that's what they're referring to.
That's what they're referring to?
You didn't know?
Because I don't want to look at these.
You see how these things come back at you?
No, I don't want to deal with these trifles, you know,
yeah,
because
okay.
you understand that if we are dealing with issues and so on for our country and a new direction, we can look at it happening at these things. You know what I mean?
Okay.
We
got
to look at and one of the things that I want the government, look, Mr. Ellis,
Barbara's
Bill Party is my government because it is the government of the country and of the people. This is what we need to understand. Whether it is a party that I would prefer or not is not relevant. See? And one of the things that I want to see here done is that, and this is very important, I did mention to Mr. the gentleman that come on Tuesday, not Mr. Ellis, when you were not there. And it is this. I would like to see the government look, we are talking about restructuring, and I want to see a fundamental restructuring change in those who are collecting the taxpayers' money to be paid into the treasury, because what has been heralded and dumped on us has got us in a backward state where we have to continue going to taxpayers for more money and more money, and then people are saying they're mismanaging. And you have millions, if not billions, of dollars being collected by those that our slave drivers has put on us, where our money has to go through hands of people that it should not be going to. And I'll tell you this, and you know what I noticed? The people in this country are not called saying that they're embezzlers. No, they're not calling them thieves, or they're not calling them dishonest.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about the collectors of our taxes and where millions of dollars are being run up and not being paid into the treasury.
But I think I think that the discussion that we had yesterday on Brass Tax Sunday was very useful in trying to address some of those issues that you have to streamline, you have to reassess, you need to introduce new measures aimed at trying to achieve those objectives.
That has to be done.
Much is
that
clear.
That has to be dealt with. Hello?
I'm listening to you.
Because then that is the bulk of the taxpayers' money that people are collecting
But you have to have a method for dealing with it. It isn't something that, this notion that you can just go there and attack people because they are exploiting the loopholes that exist is nonsense. It does not work like that. You're not going to achieve that by moral suasion alone.
It is not nonsense. I'm saying to you, this is why we are talking about.
You gotta understand the system and how to, you can modify the system to achieve your objectives.
But this is what I'm talking about. Remember, I said if you're talking about restructuring these, that this is a fundamental, these are fundamental areas that has to be looked. And I'll tell you this: what I want to see also in the law, that companies, directors are held responsible for the taxpayers' money that they collect and are not paying it into trade. Because I'll tell you this, we look at one side and I tell you something, this system is geared merely to target people like you and I. I am saying that, and I say that unapologetically. You see? Because then there are certain people who can hold on to the country's purse or money and don't pay it in, and nothing happens to them. And we've got to, if you're going to have changes, so that we can have the money that is due to the country to run the country properly instead of people to come
here. Running hand in hand, running hand in hand with that, my friend, is that once you collect the people's money,
yes,
you must target areas of growth and you must weed out inefficiencies as much as possible, because it doesn't make sense just collecting taxes from people and basically treating it like pouring water in the sea.
That doesn't make sense. Yes, but the government's not collecting it when people are withholding it. You heard.
The government has collected a lot of money from people over the years. And as you have heard many people say, it is very difficult to see where the money has gone, because a lot of it has gone to pay wages. And if you look at all these statutory corporations and government departments, the 93 that came in the Survey Monkey, you will see what a percentage is going in paying wages, salaries, and dealing with pension and NIS. So, you know, it's high, and I agree. If you want to keep it there, I don't believe that you can cut your way out of everything. But if you want to keep it there, then you got to look for areas of growth. You got to look at the efficiency issues. You got to look at the whole question of the kind of service that we are giving to one another. You got to deal with the struggling small companies that want to grow but cannot grow because of all the obstacles in their way. And what we just heard from the minister in the Ministry of Finance, about matters such as what they are planning to do at the port to improve that situation, something that people have been complaining about for years. We can no longer postpone those things, kicking the can down the road. But remember this, the government is going to get a lot of criticism once these things start to bite. There are a lot of people, and that's part of the reason why we have not done it in the past, because many people have been afraid to take that kind of action. This is something we can no longer postpone because of the state of the economy. Down to brass tacks, let's take another call. Hello?
Mr. Ellis?
Yes, sir.
Good afternoon to you. First of all, I want to congratulate Verla de Pisa for, of course, rising to the cause and accepting the responsibility of president over the next year, I would say, until the next IO conference or beyond. But I was talking about some. I was listening to somebody who made the case that someone who was rejected should not even get a looking. They should be banished, as if to be banished to Siberia. But there are classic examples that went before Miss Verla de Pisa, who people who were rejected and who, after the rejection, was looked upon for leadership or to assert or to assume leadership roles.
Mm-hmm.
The very prime minister of our country, Mr. Ellis, she was rejected in a group of people in 2008, and she's now being accepted as the maximum leader.
Wasn't rejected at the polls completely. She was rejected as a leader within the party.
But I'm glad you made that point, because even a bigger fish than she. Also was rejected at the polls. In terms of rejection, and that was Sir Harold Bree St. John. But he was defeated at the polls, and he came back and assumed not only his seat in Parliament, but the leadership of the country.
And so then was defeated again. And then was defeated again as leader.
Excuse me?
And then he was defeated again as leader.
But the point remains that if you are rejected at the polls, that don't mean that you have to be banished for all times.
A lot depends upon the environment. What are you fighting against? What are the issues? Somebody said to me here that they sent me a text and said that as far as they're concerned, the Democratic Labour Party also needs to canvass the views not only of the LP people, but of the general country to try to get a better sense of what people are asking for from the political party. What kind of leadership are they looking for? I mean, how is the Democratic Labour Party choosing its leader today? Can you explain that for me?
But I can get back to that. But the same criteria that you're now trying to impose on the Democratic Labour Party, was that same thing imposed on the Barbados Labour Party when they were looking for
yes,
a new leader?
Just hold on. You know that discussion has also taken place as it relates to the Barbados Labour Party. When Miss Motley was ousted, in that one seat majority that ousted her, that discussion took place there too. It is as relevant to the Democratic Labour Party as it is to the BLP.
Which one seat majority you're talking about?
Pardon?
Which one seat majority you're talking about?
I think when Mr. Arthur took back the leadership?
Yes.
Right. So that discussion and reference has been made, for instance, to the United National Congress in Trinidad and how they choose their leadership, the political leadership, because the difference here right now is that Ms. DePisa has been chosen as president, and I would expect that that's right across the rank and file. Agreed?
Yes.
But when there are circumstances where the parties are choosing the political leadership, and that discussion was, should that not be thrown open to the floor as well? Because
to the floor of the rank and file members
yes,
of the party?
Yes.
Oh, but who do you think elected Ms. DePisa yesterday?
No, I'm talking about, she's president of the party, yes. But
yes.
I think that discussion relates to, it's not relevant to the Dems right now because they don't have a seat in parliament.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
But you would have to have a general consensus, almost a referendum.
Within the party itself, would that be within the political party structure? And I'm not just talking about the BLP or the DLP.
Do
you
think
that is as it relates to the president of the party?
Yes. So what?
But you know, the parties have the president, and they also got political leader too.
But the political leader is closely associated with who emerges as president. As president, the political leadership is normally appointed by the elected members of parliament.
Precisely.
There are no elected members.
And
of
that's why I'm saying to you, it's not relevant in this particular instance because
absolutely,
you have no elected MPs.
Okay. Absolutely. But the question of rejection and all of that business. Mm-hmm. I mean, so many people could be pointed out if not individually rejected, they were a part of a group that was rejected. Even the four of the current members of this cabinet, they were a part of.
So you really believe that there is no merit in waiting to see how the dust settles as it relates to the people's acceptance of those who have been rejected? In other words, can't you find yourself in a situation, as has happened in the past, you've spoken of people who've come back. There are many people who were rejected and never came back because it was felt that, one, they were too old based upon what was happening at the time, or that they had been too stained by criticism or whatever else, allegations and that sort of thing, that made it difficult to present them to the public again.
agree with all of that. But rejection in itself cannot be used as a criteria to
You and I agree on that.
Useless.
We agree on that. All right? Yes. So that's why we're suggesting to you that it is more than just rejection. It is the circumstances and the environment prevailing closer to a general election. That's when you make that kind of decision. I'm not saying it will be immediately before, because every person needs to be given a chance to go there and court a constituency and stuff. And in many instances, some of those decisions can be made now. You can say, okay, so let's take possibly a candidate who was running for the first time. Whether that person lost the deposit or not, you can decide, well, right now, you need to start going back into the field and trying to test the waters and that sort of thing. Whereas somebody who lost the deposit and who might be age 52 right now, 53, anywhere like that, you say, but does it make sense having that person go immediately to test the waters? Give it some time. Let's see. Let's research. Because the first and most important part of that is the research that needs to be done to determine whether that person has a chance or not, right?
But Ms. Ditpizer is in an ideal position, Mr. Ellis, in that she is starting from ground zero, just like all of the other players, whether they are candidates who participated in last election or prospective candidates, they all are starting from ground zero. Therefore, she is in an ideal position to sort of have her own way in some fashion with the party, bring around her those people who can advance the cause of the party in a positive way. And I think that I'm not seeing her as any stopgap, as any interim nothing.
That's you.
Because if the role grows on her and the rank and file members of the party sort of bring her in.
If what will it take? What will it take on her part to achieve that?
Her leadership skills.
Leadership and skills. And what does that mean? In the context of the Democratic Labour Party and where it stands today, what do you see as the elements of leadership that need to be exercised? Recognizing that you have a whole set of people who've served in cabinet before. Politicians have huge egos.
They will have to swallow their egos for being, Mr. Ellis.
You think that easy?
But they will have to follow. They will have to swallow their
Why?
Egos and give the party.
What makes you believe that they won't challenge her leadership?
But that is part of the thing. But the thing is that if she has ingratiated herself with the rank and file members, they're the people who, at the end of the day, will make a decision whether or not she will continue as leader or whether she will have to relinquish the position to somebody else who is a stronger candidate for president.
Political leadership is a vicious place to be in. You know that?
Vicious. This can only be operationalized if the rank and file buys in to you.
Well, we'll see if she's able to get the rank and file to buy into it. But before she gets to the rank and file, you have to deal with the people who are considered to be within the leadership of the party as well. She's just like how you remember that fight they just had in the Anglican Church between the clergy and the laity?
Well, don't mind how ambitious they are. They still have to get the buy-in of the rank and file. Nobody votes for themselves alone to of course, rise to the leadership of any organization. They have to get the membership on their side. And this time, since yesterday, Miss Verla Ditpizer has the rank and file on her side.
I don't know the nuances of all of this. I don't know how it is that what caused the other people to back out. I don't know who were the people who were supporting her, that pushed her ahead. I don't know a whole set of stuff inside there. And there are those elements that can determine one way or the other whether she survives as leader.
Don't second guess anything.
I just open-minded. I just say second guessing anything. I know one thing. I know is that we are dealing with human beings. You're dealing with a political party, and there's a lot that goes with that you can't take for granted.
You have a certain situation before. before you, if certainty, but still you want to speculate and get into all kind of...
What certainty? The only certainty I have is that she was elected unopposed. I do not know the nuances.
She had the acclamation of the party.
And what that means?
But do you know what acclamation means?
When I've seen people who have had acclamation of parties in the past and they still had real difficulty staying in leadership position. There was a time when Miss Motley had it too. You forget?
Some of you people, I'm not put you in this group, but some of the people out there, they don't want to even give the Democratic Labour Party a chance of recovery.
I wonder why. Why you think so?
I want to compliment the party too because...
You know, somebody asked me some time ago, a couple of months ago, after the elections, she said to me, but you knew that the people hated the Democratic Labour Party, so though? I said, well, I didn't realize. How did you get that to realize that? I said, well, and the person is living outside of Barbados. He said, from all the things that were coming back at her and what she read online and that sort of thing, she picked up that there was a hatred. I must tell you, there is a sense, there's still a residue of deep feeling against aspects of the Democratic Labour Party that you need to take into consideration. Ask me how it got so bad, I can't tell you all the factors.
I can take that into consideration, and I have been taking it into consideration. Mm-hmm. But you know what else I take into consideration?
Mm-hmm.
That 59 to 60% of the electorate voted.
Yes.
40% did not vote or commit themselves one way or the other.
And?
Well, I have the consideration.
And?
And it is clear, 60% of the electorate turned up on the 24th of May. 30% gave the support to the Democratic Labour Party, and 70% gave it to the Barbados Labour Party.
Yeah.
But 40% stayed home. So if the Barbados Labour Party think that they can rest on their laurels and believe that everything is going to be hunky-dory in this country, then they better start to rethink their positions. So there, and I'm going to tell you, the Democratic Labour Party is far from dead. And all this 20-year and all of that, when the economic measures begin to bite where it is most felt, you're going to see how things will change.
You know, the argument to that is, it is because of the Democratic Labour Party that you're in a position where the economic measures have to bite as hard as they're biting now. And for 10 years, the Barbadians gave the Democratic Labour Party the opportunity and gave them a lot of support in trying to improve the situation. So if it means that you have to go through a period now of even more hardship, a lot of that may be argued by some, has to be rooted in what the Democratic Labour Party failed to do.
Finally, Mr. Ellis, despite all of that talk, the social services in this country remain vibrant and effective, and we never defaulted as a government. That is what you have to go away with.
Well, you left the Barbados Labour Party with a situation where they were between a rock and a hard place. To claim that you didn't default, that is not the beginning and the end of the story. Look where the foreign reserves were left.
But their own short-sighted decision. We met our bills. We paid them on time.
We will have ample time to come back to that, but the truth of the matter is that however you argue, there is always a countervailing argument that can come at you.
And I am prepared for them.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Down to brass tacks. Hello? You on the air.
Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. We're going to 1:30 today. Yes.
Good afternoon, Miss Ellis.
Wow. All the Dems out today, boy. This election yesterday has reinvigorated the Democratic Labour Party supporters. I ain't hear you for so long. I thought you were gone under a rock.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes, sir.
This program today changed my plan that I already put about 2 weeks after the election.
Is the election that changed your plans, not this program?
Man, listen a minute. Why you don't allow Democrats to speak freely?
Listen, you know you have ample time to speak here. I have never silenced you yet. And even if I tried, I couldn't.
But let me explain to you what I'm saying. I told you, Mr. Ellis, not another moderator. I told you and Corey Lane on two different occasions that I am giving the Barbados Labour Party until the first Monday in September. I told you directly. I called in the day of the West Indies beat Bangladesh in Trinidad, and Mr. Dennis Johnson answered the phone, and I asked him, can you get Corey to give me the quickest score? Today? And Mr. Johnson put me on the air straight to ask the question on air. And when I talked to Corey, so Corey, I'm not here discussing politics, not to the first Monday, September. And he told me, I'm glad he had given him 100 days. So don't say that I'm hiding. I already identified to you. I already told you all.
My sincere apologies.
In September.
My sincere apologies. So what caused you to revise your agenda?
You forced me out today.
How so?
Now, first of all, Miss Ellis, before I get to my main point, how did Bloodline get to that conversation with that gentleman?
I tell you, somebody sent a message. Because I considered it relevant.
To the conversation you had with that gentleman?
Yes. Once the person raised it, I considered it relevant. You think it's irrelevant?
Of course.
Well, so be it. We can't agree on everything.
Let me answer this one also. The gentleman was explaining to you that I know you know that the business people in this country did not fall in love with that upfront tax duty at the port. The 2 to 10, because they love the 17.5 that passes through their hand first. That is all the gentleman was trying to tell you. And you're going to say, Wayne, also, have you checked the amount of money collected that the business people in this country owe national insurance and the tax office? Most of the problems we have now, because we will solve all, but it will help us.
Can I say something to that?
Then let me finish it, and then you can say it. Mm-hmm. He was trying to explain to you, Mr. Ellis, that we have to find a way in getting these business people paying the money by a particular time. Let me hear you now, Mr. Ellis.
I think in analyzing why business people react the way they do, you have to look at the totality of the picture sometimes, you know. If you are not necessarily... taxing them in the right way and looking at the system from the point of view of whether they feel fair, that you're treating them fairly or unfairly, you can run people underground, you know. And a lot of the complaints that I heard during the Democratic Labour Party period are reminiscent of things that I've heard in previous DLP administrations. Somehow, the DLP has had a relationship with the business community over many years that produces a lot of criticism from its supporters. And eventually what seems to emerge is an antagonistic relationship between business and the Dems. And I don't think that's taking the Democratic Labour Party anywhere. I think that there's got to be some attempt, and this is where the new leadership has to look at what is going on here. There must be an attempt to understand what forces people underground. If there's a lack of confidence in the economy and people hold on to their money, they won't only hold on to it, they will try to evade taxes and stuff like that. So it is trying to create an environment where they don't feel inclined to do that. But rather than fix that aspect of the problem, the Democratic Labour Party supporters like yourself tend to put more of the emphasis on attacking the business community.
Okay, Ms. Ellis, I really ain't come out to talk about this, you know, but I only bring that because of the conversation. But I hope you allow me to get to George Street yesterday. But let me explain this to you.
But I hope you were there yesterday. They needed you.
You don't hope. You know I'd be there. But what I'm saying is, July last year, the former Minister of Finance introduced a tax from 2 to 8. The prices start to rise from June, not July, August. The prices start to skyrocket from June. The complaint, the march, everybody marched. And you know the muck lips we get on by our socks. Because, you know, by our socks love licking at the DLP.
I must tell you, though, that we also gave you ample opportunity to defend.
Okay, well, I hear no to do it, too. But what I'm saying is, the present prime minister bought a mini budget and removed the tax. And I heard Mr. Abayes and Mr. Herbert say prices will start to come down in a month or two. And let me tell you this. I heard the prime minister say that the tax that Mr. Sinclair introduced was so bad that it caused prices to triple. That is the word, to triple. Don't you know from the time she removed that tax, the prices start to go up again? And they're going up. I hear you shop. I hear people see you in the supermarket all the time, Miss Ellis. So you know what he's saying is true. You know that the prices is going up.
I will let you just start your period from spying on me.
The rate that last year from June. You know from the time she bought the mini budget, you know it start to go up again? And the thing about it is that your print media and your station and the leaders of the unions ain't saying a word. Why, Miss Ellis?
Perhaps it's because the government, the prime minister, has explained to the country the circumstances facing Barbados at the moment that have forced her to do just that.
No, I'm talking about her part. I'm talking about the business people part, Mr. Ellis. I'm not talking about she having to introduce taxes that she complained was too much before and introducing them. I'm not dealing with that. I'm going to deal with that from the first Monday in September. I'm dealing with the business people. They increase it, as the prime minister said, triple from June last year. And then she remove it, the start counting the prices again after this weekend. I hear people complaining about the prices of things going up by $4 or $5, not by 30, 40, 60 cents. Let me get to my point now.
But I thought that in an environment where the price of oil has been going back up,
in
an environment where the prices...
You'll be a good girl. Keep it in,
oh. Well, let me finish because you don't understand. I remember we had a discussion about this here. One person wrote in and indicated that war that has been going on between China and the United States was certainly going to impact on Barbados because that 25% increase on tariffs that the Trump administration has imposed on Chinese goods has had a bearing on Barbados and will continue to have a bearing on us. If your government puts more money on petrol as opposed to the road tax that was used, then clearly it will impact on prices as far as I'm concerned. So it's a mix of internal and external factors that would influence the prices.
Oh,
now, having said all of that, let me also recognize that there are many people in Barbados who, once the price goes up, as retailers and wholesalers, they find it very difficult to bring the price down. And as long as the market, remember, we are dealing with market conditions. If you and I go there and buy the items, then we create the environment where they will continue to keep the prices high.
As a shopper, when you saw prices coming down, when that happened?
I don't, listen, I tell you all already. From the time I caught myself in the 60s in this country, and from the time I was a child, all I ever heard people complain about was the rising cost of living.
Okay,
I have never heard anybody say the cost of living came down.
Let me get to my point, and so we can move on, because I really only come on because of Mr. DePisa. But I can ask you, Mr. Ellis. I only know Mr. DePisa in 2007. I came back in 2006, and I met her in 2007. And I saw an outstanding woman. I saw a woman that, there's another lady that reminded me a lot about her now, a lady named Kim Chuda. They told him, you can look and see something. You don't know what it is, but there's something that you want to find out. Outstanding. How come that you don't know nothing, Miss Alice, and you were there all the time?
Who, me?
Oh, you don't see nothing?
Listen to me. When this program is finished, I hope that Dennis Johnson will play a special dedication for you. It's called Follow the Leader, 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 Leader. That's what I hope, because this is all part and parcel of, this is how party politics is in this country. The minute that somebody is chosen, there's an echo, it's a bad echo. The minute that somebody is chosen to lead any of these political parties around here, all of a sudden it seems as though they have become the greatest thing on earth. And that's where the rank and file falls into line. So you are just, as far as I'm concerned, you're just doing that. That's why you come out here today, because you're following the leader. You have vote for this leader, so I don't expect anything else from you. Let's take another call down to brass. Seems as though we were having an echo there on that line, so that's why I had to leave you. Down to brass tacks. It's 1:26, and I have time for only one call. One more call in today's edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Hi, good afternoon, Miss Alice. How are you?
Wow.
I don't know what to do.
I am well today, man. Let me tell you, you boys got me by surprise, man.
Listen, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, please.
I don't know if this is the case of saving the best for last, right?
Mm-mm.
But you ain't got much time, so I don't want you taking up all
You really time. Jumped me today.
Yes. I jumped you today. And I got three things I want to discuss with you. I don't know if you can get them in.
Yes.
One is about being disingenuous to me.
How?
Two is about bread.
What?
And three is about flat farm banter. So if you could get into three of them, it would be good.
No, you ain't got time for three.
A half an hour.
Tell me how it was disingenuous to you.
No, let me start with yesterday first. I don't know if you listen to Mr. Pisa. But she said that in there was full, and it was standing room only. So I don't have to give you that.
I know. If I judge her the way I judge you, I would be very cautious. But I am not. I'm going to take her word. I prefer that she said it rather than you.
Right. Good. But you figure that rats would have ran through there.
No, I don't know. Why are you ascribing that to me? Why I wasn't involved in any such conversation.
I don't know, Mr. Ellis. I said people. If you was one of them, you is.
I'm not.
You stop at the front of the class.
Listen, you can go come back to me Friday, Friday. Because time has caught up with us, and I can't pursue it any further. But it's a pleasure hearing you, Strikers Tenantry. Wow. All you all needed was the party conference. You see how party meetings and stuff help to mobilize the rank and file. That's what today is telling you again, you know, that it is important to these political organizations, especially the two major ones, that they get out there and lead the fight against all others, whether it is the media, the opposition, their opponents, whatever. A pleasure to hear you all. That's it for today's edition of Down to Brass Tacks. I'm David Ellis. Thanks to Dennis Johnson. You have a great afternoon.